This is a Charles Russell Speechleys podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Score, the Charles Russell Speechleys podcast where we examine legal and strategic issues in the administration and business of sport. My name is Darren Bailey and I'm a consultant to the sports team here at CRS. And today we'll be taking a look at an issue that has always been significant in sport, but as a result of recent events has moved very much to the top of the agenda of many sports bodies in light of the crisis. And that's the whole issue around insurance. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by a couple of experts in the area of insurance from CRS to guide us through some of these issues and the complexities. So may I first welcome Manoj Vahela and Satish Kanke, both partners at CRS, and they can let us know just what their field of expertise in, guys.
Hi, Darren. It's Manoj here. Yes, I'm, for my sins, I'm a specialist insurance coverage lawyer, been so for the last 30-odd years. My background is acting for both the insurers and latterly for the clients across the whole range of business, really, going from sort of contingency and cancellation work, sports, Bermuda form, casualty. So what I've found is that the current climate is actually one that's throwing up a lot of issues that people need exploring.
I'm a partner in the sports team as well. I deal mainly with M&A in the sports business, but also structuring and the organisation of sport, particularly elite sport. So what I've been finding recently is that obviously I deal with a lot of queries from across the range of sports business, but at the moment and in the last few months, a lot of those queries have been about insurance due to the impact of COVID across the sports business. And what I've found very useful in the last few months is that we can call upon experts such as Manoj to deal with those queries for our clients.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. I can see that we're in safe hands with that knowledge that you bring to the topic. So what I think we could look at today are some of the key issues that I think have been challenging to some of our sports clients in light of the COVID-19 crisis. And I think what I'd like to do is start by examining one of the first issues we saw back in March, which was the event cancellation side of things. We can then move on and take a look at the increasingly controversial area of business interruption. And then with an eye on the future, maybe get some of your thoughts on the state of the insurance and reinsurance market now. As you can see, there's lots to get through. Manoj, can I start with you, please? I just give us your impression about the way in which that whole event cancellation has been handled at this during this sort of early phase. And what are the main challenges you've been seeing across sport?
Well, I think it was interesting because when we had lockdown in March, and obviously people had been concerned about it a little while earlier, and we all know that sort of Cheltenham, for example, went ahead. When we had lockdown, initially the market, the insurance market, and generally the entertainment and sports world generally didn't know how long it was going to go to last. So there was a challenge initially in getting the insurers on board with cancellations. And I think where we got to was it helped that the players in this market are sort of, there's a few of them, everybody knows each other. And so from our perspective, we were able to help out our sports clients because we also know the adjusters and the claims people, the insurers quite well. And we were able to get grown-up discussions underway so that quick decisions could be taken on cancellation, on cost, on support. And, you know, our experience certainly at CRS in some of the major events we've been handling is that there's been a mature collaborative approach between the clients, between the brokers, between the loss adjusters, between the insurers. I mean, I have to say I'll have to contrast that later on with some of the shenanigans that we've seen on business interruption. But I think the event cancellation market, by and large, has behaved very well. It's been done in a mature fashion. Yes, there are disputes, but the disputes, what we're doing is finding out where the areas of dispute are, and then we're finding ways of sensibly resolving them. So things are being handled in a mature fashion, sort of behind closed doors, as it were, rather than, you know, being fought out in public. Because at the moment, certainly with big events, people need sport, people need the big events, people need things to look forward to. And what people don't really want is some sort of massive public spat when people just want the world to try to get back to normal. That really has been my experience.
Well, that sounds to me, from a sporting point of view, very, very constructive, and perhaps something that is not making its way into the public domain. So there's that kind of working together with your experience during the recent weeks?
Yeah, Darren, that's 100% my experience. So I've been acting for clients who are big event organisers, where, as Manoj said, when the COVID lockdown first hit, their event was some months or some weeks away, where there was no certainty as to whether the event should actually be cancelled or not. And as many people have said, this is completely unprecedented, uncharted territory. So there was no plan to follow, but the way through that my clients found the best way was to enter into a dialogue with the brokers and the insurers. It's not an adversarial situation where, you know, it's not like litigation where, you know, you need to not disclose your hand. It was very much a collaborative approach, so that my clients could talk to the insurers and say, okay, well, what should we do to make sure that, you know, we do the right thing vis-a-vis the event going ahead, if possible, but not to lose their cover by making a misstep. So, yeah, and access to people like Manoj to be involved in that dialogue was ideal for my clients, so they could navigate that uncharted territory with an expert.
Thanks. I mean, I think it's interesting, isn't it? I think we're going to see a few trends emerging out of COVID that are going to have wider implications across the profession. What you've described there is not a million miles away from this whole concept of the appropriate and reasonable enforcement of contractual rights that we're being encouraged to actually adopt as a strategy in order to avoid a deluge of litigation and in order to keep many businesses afloat. So it's quite encouraging on that event cancellation side to see that approach was adopted. However, Manoj, as you've referred to, not all aspects of the insurance sector have necessarily covered themselves in glory there. So I'm going to have to raise the issue with you of business interruption and just what's going on there.
Yes, it has been quite a tricky issue because there are some instances where there is insurance cover for communicable diseases. But what you're having is the insurers saying, look, we never meant to insure a pandemic. And what we've now got is something, you know, we weren't prepared for, we didn't insure for. Now, that in many ways isn't the right way of looking at it, because for years, and I've been an insurance lawyer for 30 odd years, one of the big things that insurers say is that what you intended doesn't really matter. Evidence of intent is irrelevant. You know, what insurance lawyers do is they construe the words, construe the words, construe the words. So I think there's been a feeling here that some of the insurers are trying to have their cake and eat it. So for the past 20 odd years, they've been saying to clients, well, I don't, you know, it doesn't matter what you thought you were buying. All we can do is enforce the contract. Whereas now, for the first time, they're putting themselves almost in the shoes of clients and saying, well, we didn't intend this, which I think in PR terms is quite bad. The big issue for business interruption on the PR front is that some insurers have actually made a play of sort of targeting small and medium enterprises, saying we're your insurer of choice, we're there to help you. And there's a feeling, certainly amongst the general public, that the first time they call on it, it hasn't worked. And so there is resentment in the industry. Some of it isn't justified, but I think the business interruption element, you know, we know that the case that the FCA has now tried to step in, that case, and I know most of the QCs on either side running that case, you know, I know the judges who are managing the case, and it'll be dealt with on a purely contractual basis. People will look at it, look at the wording, and the big issue is going to be, you know, what the actual cause of the loss was. So did you stop making money because of, you know, an interruption to your business because of COVID, or have you suffered a business interruption loss simply because of the whole lockdown? And so in any event, even if things had improved, nobody was going to go, you know, to your event in any way or form. There's a very famous case called the Orient Express case, which arose out of Hurricane Katrina, where a hotel in the USA effectively suffered damage and couldn't open. They claimed under their business interruption policy, but ultimately the court held that even though the hotel had been damaged, the fact was that because of Hurricane Katrina, nobody was going to Louisiana, New Orleans in any event. And so therefore, the hotel owner couldn't recover under his business interruption insurance. And that really is going to be the major issue that's going to be fought in these business interruption claims. Even if you can get home and say, look, I shut down because under this wording of COVID, the big issue will be, well, in terms of causation, would it have made any difference? If you've got a lockdown in any event, who's going to go to your event? Who's going to go to your store? So sadly, the business interruption piece isn't going to be resolved quickly. It will probably leapfrog to the Supreme Court, because whatever happens at first instance. And so for the businesses out there, I'm afraid there's no quick fix. It will take a bit of time. The case is due to be heard on the 25th of March for 8 days. And then they've agreed that there's going to be leapfrogging direct to the Supreme Court to try to get things done quickly. But, you know, if people are expecting money in 2 weeks, I'm afraid not.
Thanks, Manos. It's clearly a complex set of circumstances. And I wonder what impact that's going to have on the future. Now, as I understand it, if we start to take a look at the future, post-SARS in 2003, as I understand it, the market underwent a bit of a review of its exclusions, looking at different standards, different policies. And do you guys envisage that there's going to be a significant readjustment of some of the forms of insurance and some of the exclusions post-COVID in the same way that it happened post-SARS? Because I'm not sure that a lot of the people that have taken out insurance since SARS have recognised some of the impact of the exclusions.
No, well, I think you're absolutely right. There was some tightening of wording after SARS, but now what you've had a sort of perfect storm of COVID, you've had some of the cyber claims, you've had a few natural disasters, and you've got a reduction in capacity in the insurance market. What that means is that insurers are going to tighten their wordings and tighten business generally. There was stuff that was given away almost as an add-on. That's now going to have to be purchased separately. We have what the insurers call a hard market now, where insurers are going to pick and choose what they want to write. Whereas previously, there was so much capacity in the market that brokers would be able to get a very good deal for people like, say, the sports groups, events organisers. But I think there is going to be an adjustment of premium, because the insurance business is a business. In essence, they get premium in and they've got to make sure they pay out less than they get in. And what COVID and a number of other disasters have shown is that these things can suddenly start impacting on solvency ratios. So from a business perspective, we're going to see an adjustment.
Thanks, Manoj. I think this where it goes from here is absolutely fascinating. Any thoughts?
I think it is absolutely fascinating. As you say, Darren, Manoj has just made it clear that there's so many complexities going forward in the insurance market. And you know, those complexities may apply differently to different participants in sport and different participants in the same sport. So one club may have an insurance policy which does cover it for business interruption, so it can save its creditors away. And another club may have a different policy which doesn't cover it for, you know, the effects on its business of COVID, which seems to many of my clients to be quite unfair and not in the best interests of sport. So I think, you know, Manoj's experience of the business interruption and his description of how exclusions may operate going forward raises a bigger question of, okay, is insurance actually fit for purpose and the correct mechanism to ensure that sport and sports businesses aren't taken under by things like COVID in the future? So I think many clients in sport are looking to government or governing bodies to say, look, is there a better solution here for us where the governing bodies should take out or provide the insurance so that, you know, it's not left to the vagaries of each individual participant's insurance policy and their cover and their particular insurer as to whether that entity survives or goes to the wall.
So that's a fascinating point. And obviously we know in the context of sport, that mutual dependency and the need to adopt similar approaches that so there's no sporting imbalance is key. But what I'm hearing from you both is that the nature of what's occurred over the last 12 weeks is going to throw up what I perceive to be a bit of a protection gap, where more sports bodies and individuals may want insurance, but they won't be able to get it on the terms that they want, and they're unlikely to be able to afford it to the level that they want. So I think the idea of identifying new solutions to address the sport specificity around insurance in sport is a good one. And Manos, have you any particular thoughts on how that protection gap might be dealt with?
Yes, I mean, I think it really from, say, if you're looking at it from a, let's say, the football end, we know that there is an awful lot of capacity and money in football, but it tends to be concentrated, you know, for understandable reasons, amongst the elite clubs. But the elite clubs, in many events, are dependent on the lower leagues, grassroots stuff, to actually nurture the talent, bring it through. And it's whether there could be some sort of approach where there's some sort of funding or something like that from, say, TV rights or revenues, where a proportion of them could actually be shared or put to one side to help lower league clubs in an event such as this. Because it's all very well having, you know, say, 10 elite clubs around the world, but where's the talent going to come from if grassroots sport dies?
A very interesting point, Manos. I fear that we are at this stage, perhaps as we're all encouraged to see the elite side of sport come back, there are some potentially significant longer term consequences around insurance and in the availability of relevant insurance lower down the pyramid. And it may well be that we need to think about looking at whatever sectors have done in order to provide specific solutions that meet the needs of the sports bodies concerned. But I want to move it on a little bit now, if I can, and I want to take a look at something that is, I think, going to be increasingly important, and that is, how will individual sportsmen and women in these more tricky times look to cover themselves, or should consider covering themselves? Because I do worry a little bit about either a misunderstandings of insurance availability, whose responsibility it is to cover. Now, more than ever, that's got to be dealt with up front, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know SAT deals with quite a lot of the individual elite sportsmen. Certainly from where I look at it, I see that most organisations will have personal accident cover, critical illness cover, all that sort of stuff. But it'll be organised on a club or organisation basis. And the individual joining, you know, whether it's a motorsport team or a tennis federation, or a football club, will sign up to effectively, it's almost like an employee benefits program. But the nature of elite sport and elite sportsmen is that if, for example, you get an injury that might cover you for 6 or 12 months, and then all of a sudden you're let go, you might find yourself in a very difficult position. So from my perspective, I think that one area that needs to be explored with individual sportsmen is to make sure that they are covering themselves alongside whatever the employer offers, if I can put it that way. You know, we all have, say, for example, we're all employees in various organizations, but some of us will have specific insurances we put in place individually rather than just relying upon the employer. And I wonder whether that is an avenue to explore for individual sportsmen, because, you know, their talent is their ability to do what they do. It's a finite life, and it's to make sure they're protected in case of unforeseen accidents and the like.
I'm picking up from you both that the levels of sophistication and due diligence that needs to take place, whether for a sports body, club, federation or individual, is going to increase, and it's going to have to be much more focused on checking out what you are buying at the acquisition of the insurance policy and not waiting for a triggering event before you realise what you've got. Sat, do you see a sort of a slight enhancement in the sophistication and an increasing role for lawyers at the front end of an insurance contract rather than just being brought in when the triggering event has occurred?
The uncertainty that's been caused by COVID, the uncertainty of what protection sports businesses and individuals have, has led the kind of the most prescient to focus on, okay, well, what is my protection if something similar happens again? And, you know, a stitch in time saves nine. There's no point in buying something, as Manoj said, that you think will cover you for a particular eventuality. And then when that eventuality occurs or something slightly different occurs, finding out that actually there's a hole in your bucket and you don't have coverage for that particular eventuality. So now is the time to plan and make sure that there is cover in place for not just, you know, a second wave or something very similar to COVID, but as far as you can, cover yourself for things that are not specifically foreseen right now.
Yeah, so it's an uncertain world. So it's quite nice to hear the references to nursery rhymes there, Sat. That's all very, very comforting. I think that one of the things that I do perceive in the future is that the reputational side of things is going to grow more and more significant in the marketplaces of the insurers. And Manoj, presumably there are some dilemmas here in the sense that, for those that are looking to sort of take fine legal points in order to avoid payment, they're not necessarily going to be that attractive in the future. And do you see that as something that's dawning on the insurance industry at the moment, and some potentially difficult conflicts between the interests of their shareholders and the interests of their clients?
Absolutely. I mean, I think most insurance companies, you know, are trying to do the right thing. Obviously, they've got shareholders, their businesses, but there is always a dilemma because you've got shareholder pressure for, you know, dividends every year, and then you've got your market reputation. And the trouble is, certainly when you're dealing with SMEs and things like that, you know, if your reputation is shot, it's shot. And I think the market is fully aware of the coverage that insurers are getting at the moment isn't uniformly good, shall we say. And that is something that is being thought about, because at the end of the day, when all of this is over, the customers are going to remember who they perceive as standing by them. The brokers are going to remember. So it's going to be a question of managing expectations at the outset, I think. And one of the problems here has been that with some insurers, they're being sort of tarred with a brush of behaving badly, when actually the only real criticism is that people didn't really understand their policies. And so it goes back to Sat's earlier point about maybe having health checks for what you've bought insurance-wise.
Yes, so I think that's obviously the way. And Sat, as we know, although it's an incredibly diverse and potentially economically significant sector, the sports world is quite a small environment. And so a bad reputation in one sector for an insurer like sport could have significant implications for sport returning to them.
Yeah, the reputation issues for insurers in a market like sport, I think, are key, because changing rooms are small and, well, they're increasingly bigger, but people do talk. And on the other side of it, I think there is potential opportunity for insurers here to become the insurer of choice for certain products. So, you know, Manoj talked about individuals. Individual sports people are increasingly sports businesses, in that individuals whose income will have suffered during COVID because there are fewer promotional opportunities, for example. So if an insurer can become the insurer of choice for that kind of risk and have significant numbers of individuals insuring them, I think there's a good bit there for them to tend to, because ultimately the risk of something like this occurring again is relatively small.
Yeah, thanks, Sat. I think it's certainly the case with sport and the need for contingency insurance. It is not going away, and it is going to become more complicated. But of course, that does actually, as you identify, present an opportunity for, you know, an agile insurer in the market who can provide what the market needs right now. So what I'd like to conclude with is get the crystal balls out if we can. And Manoj, with your significant experience, I'm going to hold you closer to account than Sat on these predictions in 12 months' time. But Where do you see the insurance market from here, say, over a 12-month horizon? What should the sports sector be specifically looking out for? I mean, certainly I'm picking up due diligence. I'm picking up closer liaison between sports bodies and their insurers and their brokers to get exactly what they need and to anticipate risk. What else do you guys see?
Initially, there'll be the knee-jerk sort of tightening wordings, etc. But really, I think there's a real opportunity for an insurer that really wants to target, for example, the sports market, to actually learn the lessons of what's gone here and actually to price and provide a product that the market really needs and wants. And I know the sports arena is so wide and so diverse, but, you know, focus on a sector. And I think there are real gains to be made, because sports people, you know, particularly individuals, some of them have the income stream of small to medium-sized companies themselves. They know each other, and reputation counts for everything. And suddenly, you know, Jane says to Laura or Jack says to Bill, hang on, I've got a good deal here with this lot, and they pay up. And I think so there's a real opportunity for a savvy insurer. And it could be one of these new disruptors that you've got in the market, one of these sort of online only type insurance presences, to actually focus, provide what the public need, and actually make a name for itself and make a lot of money. So what I think is that with sport, we're going to see some innovation. Initially, there'll be the knee-jerk exclusions alike, but I think the market in sports so huge, so global, it's ripe for some sort of innovative product.
Great, thanks, Manos. Seth, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'll come back to what Manos says about innovation and the two areas that I touched on previously. So I think in terms of team sports, collective sports, and particularly lower down the ladder, I think there'll be an impetus amongst those participants, those clubs, to look for collective insurance, whether that be from insurers or from governing bodies. So I think some participants will find the cost of insurance, particularly after COVID, for business interruption and cancellation to be too costly. And therefore, they'll look to, as I said before, governing bodies or a collective solution so that individual clubs don't go to the wall, whereas others survive. So I think that's one thing we'll see. And then just on the individual side of things, as I mentioned before, I think certain individuals at the higher end have seen their income fall because of on the commercial side rather than on their playing salary and prize money. So I think they may be looking for more business type insurance for themselves to cover them against that loss of income, which can come with a situation like we've seen.
Thanks both. Look, I very much appreciate you providing your insights and knowledge of some very interesting and complex issues that confront the sports sector when it comes to insurance. You know, it's great that the sports team can call upon people with the experience of Manoj over that 30-year period. And I do think that it's going to be a real key aspect for the sports business moving forward. And it's good to see that we've got the ability to service clients' needs and to anticipate some of those changes coming. So thanks both for joining me today and for your brilliant insights. Thanks very much.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.